Good morning, everyone. Coming to you live from somewhere in the Middle East, it is Saturday morning's hottest streaming media political talk show, Inside the Eye, live with The Fedge. Did I just hear someone tell a standing member of Congress that if it were up to them, they would dump the Israelis tomorrow? Sounds like something you might hear right here on Inside the Eye Live.
The Fetch. What a man. Oh, my God. You have to listen to that show. He was brilliant. I didn't know he had gonads of steel like that and a mind like a frigging razor. I didn't realize he was so clear. He cut through this that cognitive dissonance that is going on in the whole Patriot music movement.
And now it's time for Inside the Eye Live, intelligent media for the politically aware. All right, everybody. From Amman, Jordan, this is The Fetch, and you are live Inside the Eye. Today's date is Saturday, July 28, 2018. Let me get a little bit situated here, a little bit better here. I just don't feel comfortable in that chair. And a good Saturday morning to all of you listening in the United States and Canada. And a good late evening. Really late afternoon to early evening to all of you listening in European and Asian time zones. And, of course, wherever you are listening out there on the World Wide Web or our FM and micro FM broadcasting outlets, may all be well with you and yours. The weather here in Amman continues to puzzle a bit as we woke to what generally feels like fall weather. That's right, very fall-like weather here. We had a lot of puffy white clouds coming through, very cool temperatures. And a brisk breeze, and that's pretty much what greeted us this morning. Really just a fantastic morning. It's been pretty much fantastic all day. Temperatures have been mostly in the middle to upper 70s, and my goodness, we're in the, just almost August now. Normally we'd be in the 90s, something like that, but we were basically in the middle 70s through most of the day as the day kind of settled and up to about now, which is peak time here. Temperature did manage to rise up to 81 degrees. However, winds have been very strong, actually, 19, 20, 22 miles per hour coming out of the west most of the day, very rarely falling below 16 miles per hour. It's been very steady, a very steady breeze that's making for a lot of fresh air, a lot of dust in the air, though. But for me, I'll take the dust over the heat any day. So I had quite an enjoyable day. And what can I say? I just kind of enjoying the weather. It's been very phenomenal, quite frankly. It's still warm in the house, you know, because of the way these houses are built. But at least with my office anyways, because my office here is back where I don't get a whole lot of breeze. However, if you go out on the balcony here or you sit in the front room or you sit, go to the kitchen, it's really, really a nice day here in Amman. last night, we had that blood moon. The problem with that blood moon here is that I've only got one eye and it's kind of tired now. But I'll tell you what, it was kind of an interesting day. You know, we had a very nice day yesterday, a huge party actually yesterday for the gal that lives here. She turned 28. She's the ripe old age of now 28. So she turned 28. We gave her a nice big party. And I did the show Thursday night. And I didn't get to sleep till like 6 o'clock, 7, 8 o'clock at night in the morning. So I went to try to get a couple hours of sleep yesterday, and I ended up getting out of bed 12 o'clock, noon. So it's only about 4 hours of sleep. And when I came out, there was 20 guests already sitting inside the house. And we ended up had quite a day yesterday. I drank way too much. I sang a little bit. I didn't sing karaoke too much. A little bit of dancing and disco in the house. It was quite a day here. You figure with all these younger ladies coming in the house, guys and gals, you can might imagine. But it was really – but I kind of woke up with my throat thrashed and hasn't really recovered. You know, that's the problem with getting old, everybody. You know, partying is great. Drinking is pretty good. But the older you get, it really takes a little bit of extra time to recover. I remember my brother telling me years and years ago, he's like 16 years older than me, I believe, and he told me something to the effect that, Dennis, you know, I was asking him, why are you drinking non-alcoholic beer? And he says to me, well, you know, when you get to be older, it's a little bit hard to recover, and I'm just getting tired of recovering, so I just drink non-alcoholic beer now. And I think he was probably about my age back then when he said that. And now I'm actually starting to figure out what he meant by that, because it just takes some time to recover once you drink a little bit too much. But we had a great time yesterday. After the party was done, we went out, or I went out really, looked up and enjoyed the blood moon, as they call it. It was pretty much in full swing. It was like quite dark, quite red, quite interesting. But I just probably can't appreciate it just simply because my eyes are a little bit too fuzzy. And until I can get that other eyeball fixed and get all this corrective lens stuff done. But it was interesting. Nonetheless, I found it interesting. I just couldn't probably enjoy it as much as a lot of people with clear vision would be able to. But nonetheless, it was quite an interesting day yesterday here. Today's been kind of just a beautiful day, but it's been a recovery day for me. I've been working very hard to try to fix the live stream for the YouTube audience. And I know you're not a huge yet, but we did our best to try to get that going. And what happened, we had a very bad echo coming out of last week's Thursday's show. And I spent a couple hours, really 2 hours or more, trying to debug why that was happening, working with customer service on the software. We never got it debugged, so we do not have a live stream today, simply because we do not want to put out another week of really bad, echoey crap, basically. That would not be a cool thing. So it's back to just live radio, everybody, Inside the Eye Live, intelligent media for the politically aware. And what is interesting today, it's actually an anniversary date. That's right. We are having the start of our 8th year of doing Inside the Eye Live. You know, we started all the way back 2011, the last Saturday of July 2011. And, you know, leading up to doing radio, I had at one time a very, very popular blog called the Illuminatusobserver.blogspot.com. And this was a website that was very dedicated to breaking the phonetic mathematic code to the English language, just how the language really works, how it's designed, how it's put together, why we're using certain sounds for certain things, and how you can, you know, decipher using gematria, numbers under letters, what different words might have meant. And that thing grew up to have over 1 million views before it really petered out. And it still has a little bit of traffic, but Google has pretty much killed it. You know, I can't even seem to get anybody to come anymore. And that's going to be part of our theme today, these tech companies killing off good information. But anyways, I had done a Red Eye show. I had done a show on Celtic Rebel, and I was surprised at how good that show ended up for traffic on the Illuminatus Observer. And I remember way back then I wanted to do radio. I thought, you know what? Let me try my hand at radio. And so I was talking to this guy, Celtic Rebel, and he had, at the time, the Celtic Rebel, all of this lesbian, gay, transgender, pedophilia that you talk about in the news today, well, that was basically the Celtic Rebel 10 years ago, 12 years ago. He was all over this. He was probably one of the first people to talk about this in a very, very real way. Now, he had his own style, his own unique. People didn't like him because they thought he was even more degenerate sometimes than the Hollywood people he was reporting on. So they didn't like him, but a lot of people did like him, and he and I collaborated, and I was the one that raised the issue with the Jewish angle. And that got then kind of fed into Lee Rogers, and that's kind of what started this whole alternative media speaking about the Jewish issue in legitimate alternative media. I'm talking about legitimate alternative media. And Oracle Broadcast at the time was the number three the number three network for this type of stuff. I know we had the Genesis people, which was what do you call this, Alex Jones. You had RBN, Republic Broadcasting Network, which still is out there doing a good job. It took me years and years quite frankly, to beat their Saturday lineup. Well, we finally did beat them, and we're probably still beating them now. I can't guarantee that. But that's all because Revolution Radio has a good following equally. And so without that, of course, we wouldn't have it. But we know a lot of you come to hear Inside the Eye Live. And again, 8 years now we've been doing this. So my goodness, 8 years. But it's been quite a journey. We tried to, again, get the live stream going. We'll still work on the live stream equally. But for today, it's just going to be back to raw radio. And, of course, we all like raw radio here. Chat room. I got 3 hours. Chat room, everybody, InsideTheEyeLive.com. Click on the live chat button. Where's my mouse? Let me see if I can head on over there. We're already there. Blau Ocean, Wolfsgang, Gummy Bear, 777. That's all I see on the screen right now, everybody. I'm sure there's more there now. But again, welcome, guys and gals, to the chat room. Telephone lines will be open. 1-323-275-1314. That's 1-323-275-1314. And give us a call. Hour number three, we're going to be bringing on Jan Lamprecht from South Africa. And he's going to be talking about some of the latest ongoings down in South Africa, the independence movements, secession movements, maybe a little bit of China, some of the recent economic deals between China, South Africa. We'll see how that goes. But he'll be joining in hour number three, and that's always a good conversation. He actually is a very articulate guy, and he really does present well. So I'm looking forward to Jan Lamprecht on again in hour number three. Blackbird, hello there. You know, some interesting developments. Thursday, we saw Facebook, and Facebook, of course, is a massive Jewish intelligence gathering operation, and their stock fell like in a complete cliff, 20%, 22%, something like that, within literally seconds, and it never recovered, and it's down, I think, another 2% yesterday in its close, and we had a discussion really about these social media companies and how Facebook has really gone out of their way to harm its user base. And when you look at social media, the product is not social media itself. The product is you. The product is me. The product is everybody that contributes content to make the social media valid. And when you have a Jewish operation like Facebook, and it's starting to tell everybody what you may and may not say, what you can and cannot do on a platform where they rely upon us for their content. Remember that, everybody, in social media. You are the content. You produce for free for them, which gets people interested to come read or hear or whatever it might be that you're doing on social media. And by doing that, you generate for these companies all those eyeballs that create all that advertising revenue. And if you don't have active users actually using the platform, well, guess what? You're going to have a decrease in your advertising base because you're not going to have as many eyeballs. And now it's starting and we hope it will continue, but, you know, don't bet on it now. But we're hoping that social media, these Jewish constructions, those that are controlled by Jewish media, Jewish power, like Twitter, and we'll talk about Twitter next here. But we're hoping that they start to really take a hit in their stocks, in their revenues, because what we have here in America today is, on one hand, we have fake news, and of course, fake news is just what it implies, fake news. This Jewish-owned media, as we like to call it here, but fake news if you're Donald Trump and others. And you know, what's funny is, I don't know if you recall, but the fake news thing, that was actually coined by the mainstream media. They're the ones that tried to sell us as the fake news, and within literally about a week or less, that term was actually turned on its head and applied back to the Jewish media. So that one didn't work out so well. But we have a situation now where literally Facebook has seen something like 109 or 19. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I think 109, I think that's 109. 109 or 19 billion dollars, folks. $109 billion of its capitalization was wiped out within a day. Zuckerberg himself lost $16 billion technically on the same day. Of course, now he's not, all that is in stock, it's all paper. But he fell, I think, a spot or two in the richest people in the world. But none of that's all that really that important. But the important part here is that social media has become the second arm, literally the second arm of Jewish media. And as we as advocates for reality, really advocates for the truth, advocates for our nations, advocates for our people, advocates for decency, advocates for honesty, we have always been up against the degenerate, dishonest, unethical, and uncouth Jewish media. That's always been the case. And this Jewish media, folks, has been so disastrous to the American people that it really is an enemy of the American people. Those editors, and I don't care, quite frankly, what you might say on this regard, but those editors who work in those newspapers and those reporters who are working every day to hide reality from you under the guise of giving you reality, as far as I am concerned, the vast majority of them are enemies of the American people. Now, that's my choice. I'm going to use that choice so long as Jews can't take that choice away from us. I don't see why, quite frankly, any of us should worship any of these people in the mainstream media as being some awesome display of fact and truth and impartiality. You know, too many Americans for so long have been involved in almost a cult worship of what they see on the television. And that is one of the key points that drives Jewish power today, because we see a dichotomy of those who are working now away on the nationalist side of things, the anti-immigration side of things, working away oftentimes in some semblance of anonymity, while the Jewish side is pulling out all of their media entertainment darlings and then trying to dictate to us what we should and should not be seeing or saying and doing and believing. How many times have you seen various artists? I think Jewel was one. Jewel, I like Jewel's work, for instance. I think as an artist, she's got some great work out there. But she comes out and she wants to tell us what we should and shouldn't be thinking politically. It's like, Jewel, shut your mouth already. We don't listen because we know it's an agenda. It's like, we're not here to have you pander to some Jewish media icon somewhere to tell us what to think. You know, you're an entertainer, and that's about it. Alanis Morissette was another entertainer that I actually used to like. And I really, now every time I think of Alanis Morissette, I think of a degenerate sleazebag. Here's a woman, who knows, maybe a dyke, promotes nothing but LGBT degeneracy. So to think that we gave all of our money just for these people to promote degeneracy within our society. And for us, this is a betrayal. So to me, most of these, quite honestly, most of these Jewish / entertainment icons that we have been fed, they are traitors in some respect to humanity itself. They have literally violated our trust in them. We didn't go pay these people just so they can go steal, just so they can go promote anti-life agendas, for instance. Anyways, I'm kind of ranting around here. I don't have a whole lot prepared for you today. We're going to get through the time, of course. It's just we were honestly trying to solve this darn software problem, everybody. I could not get it solved. That echo was everywhere. And it's like, man, ever since, you know, I was talking to a company. You know, we have an old statement. I know it's a little old Americana, everybody, but it's if it's not broke, don't fix it. You know, if it's not broke, don't fix it. And one of those issues, like the software Skype, Skype, for a long time, was actually a very brilliant platform. It had a lot of great features. It was very efficient. You could do a lot of great things with it. And with each additional update, they continue to destroy it, break it further. And that's kind of what this live streaming software I was using. Everything was going great, quite frankly. And then, yeah, we got the new update. Okay, I'd done all these updates before without any problem. But as soon as I updated, everything went south. So it seems like with this latest update, they've broken the software. And what can we say? So we're kind of stuck with that. Back to this social media stuff. You know, Twitter also saw its stock tank yesterday. And it's shed something like 70 million users over the last 6 months, something like that. Now, a lot of those users were never active anyway, so they just kind of got rid of a lot of users. It managed to meet expectations as far as its earning goes. It just reported earnings of something like $711 million compared to the $698 million that it was expected to bring in. So it actually beat expectations. Revenue was up something like 2.4%, or no, 24% from a year ago, but it saw its position tank. And there's something that they're doing now called Q. Let me see if I can pull this up here really quick here. Shadow ban EU. Yes. There's something called shadow banning. And literally what is happening here is Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, they are basically discriminating against us. Literally, this is what they're doing is in this particular shadow ban. Let me try to give you an idea. Shadow ban tester, HTTP, yes. All right. I'm going to plug in Radio ITEL, for instance, because that's my – you can follow me at Radio ITEL on Twitter. And what you do is you check on this thing. It says it finds me. There's no search ban. There is a no thread ban, but I have what's called a QFD, a quality filter D. I'm not sure what the D stands for, but quality filter disable ban or something like that. I am actually shadow banned on Twitter. And, you know, I have worked on Twitter so hard to try to raise my profile. You know, you wonder, how is it we can't grow our numbers, everybody? Why can't we seem to get a bigger audience? Well, the reason is because these major tech companies are banning our message from actually getting out. I did something for Blackbird 9. I was like, okay, how about everybody else in our network? Blackbird 9 underscore 9. That's, you can follow Blackbird, Frederick, in the chat room there. And his, of course, Blackbird 9's Breakfast Club. He's got no search ban, no thread ban, but he also has a QFD ban. Andrew Carrington Hitchcock, again, some of the sponsors of the show here, he has a QFD ban. So essentially what's happening, everybody, is I have right now like 988 followers on Twitter. It peaked at like 1,072. So I've never been a big guy, a big player. But I'm like, I've posted 23,000 tweets over the years, a couple years now. How is it I just can't grow? You know, why am I not growing? Well, the reason I'm really not growing, because it's not like I don't have interesting things to say, folks. The real reason I'm not growing is because Twitter has been keeping everything that I write inside of a very narrow band of people who just happen to follow me equally. Basically, I only get to go out to people within my network of followers. So if I respond, for instance, to President Trump, and I leave a message to President Trump about something, in theory, he should be able to get that. Into a break already. It's the Fetch. Back with more right after. It's the Fetch Inside the Eye, live intelligent media for the politically aware on what is really the start of year number 8. That's right, year number 8 for Inside the Eye Live. Man, all the stories we've had over the years, you know, going back 8 years now of doing Inside the Eye Live. You know, one fun story I can tell is coming out of doing this show was we used to not have good equipment. I would buy the best equipment I could buy because I do respect the audience and want to present the best product possible. So I used to use a LifeChat USB microphone by Microsoft, and that was the best I could afford back then. And we had a guy that works as an outsource guy, not directly, but as an outsource guy for ESPN, really likes my work, and he ended up sending me a whole bunch of equipment that I'm using even to this day. That's why it's a good equipment. And I couldn't afford to get it out of I honestly could not afford to get it out of customs. It arrived, customs came in, gave me a bill for $500 to get it out of customs. I'm like, what? You know, why? And then the whole value of the shipment was really only a couple hundred dollars, but they wanted like $500 for something I'm going to use privately. And here I've got some lost time calling all my people trying to get everything out of customs saying, hey, man, you know, why are you charging me like this? And they said, well, that's what it is. And eventually we got it down to like $100 to get it out of customs. They said, Dennis, this is the best deal we're going to be able to get you. And I couldn't even afford the $100 back then, folks. I really could not afford it. And a Palestinian guy, a listener from Palestine, who was a big fan of the show back then. I haven't heard from this guy in years now, quite frankly. But he finally sent me a private message. He had my Skype. He said, Dennis, I keep hearing about this because we talked about it on the air all the time. He said, how much you need to get it out of customs? And I said, I need $100. And he said, I'll tell you what, send me your name. I will, you know, officially, and I will send you $100 on Western Union. He did that. We went and we got it out of customs. And from there, we've actually had some pretty good produced shows because we've got the right equipment now. But I remember one time I was down to like a $3 microphone that was just cheap because everything else had broken. And I'm trying to do the show on Oracle Broadcasting at the time. And I'm doing the show, and I got like 40 minutes to go, 35 minutes to go. It's a three-hour show back then. We've always pretty much done a three-hour show. We've been one of those long-haul artists, I think it is. And I had all these kittens. I had like six kittens playing around my feet the whole time during the show. And this had a very long cable, very long wire, but it was a cheap, cheap, cheap piece of equipment, if you can even call it equipment, really. And I'll be darned, the kittens literally chewed through the microphone with about 35 minutes to go. And obviously, the feed went blank because I had no microphone left. And that was kind of like the funniest, not one of the funniest, but it was certainly one of the funnest times back then. You know, we worked so hard to try to bring you a show every Saturday, literally a live show every Saturday. And that particular show is coming from that area that was the former refugee camp, Palestinian refugee camp. And that place was just terrible. I'll tell you what, you're trying to do a show and people are throwing firecrackers in your windows. You know, it was a terrible, terrible place to be. And I'm thinking, man, no wonder why Jews can't stand you guys. You know, here I am trying to be nice to you Palestinians, but you're doing this to me. And I can understand why Jews don't like you. You're not making anybody a friend of yours by doing this stuff. But nonetheless, those were some wild, wild times, everybody, trying to get this show out over the air. And, of course, when we came here to Revolution Radio, Nighthawk did a great job. He got me back onto TalkStream Live. We had been blocked at TalkStream Live. We continue to be blocked at TalkStream Live. And we were... From Oracle, we would oftentimes jump into the number one, number two, number three position every Saturday. And that's kind of what the theme of this show is how Jewish media is unfairly sabotaging our efforts to promote our message and thus harm our interests. And so, Nighthawk, I recall he got the show back, put back up on TalkStream Live, and he's saying, hey, that's kind of cool. You know, thanks, Nighthawk. Within literally like a month, you know, I again made waves, I guess, on TalkStream. Within a month, we were taken back off, and Nighthawk was kind enough to kind of let me know what was going on in a more direct way than most would realize. And I, you know, but it was Jewish people. I can assure you it were Jewish people behind the scenes whining like a bunch of pathetic losers, to destroy somebody else's opportunities out there, because Jews want all the glory. They want the only message out there, and they want to harm all of our collective interests to create and formulate our political message so that we have a chance to compete in this open air of ideas. And that's kind of what's happening with this Twitter and Facebook and other issues. But let's get back to that. Because we want to say it's listener-sponsored and supported radio. It does rely upon your donations to help keep the network alive, up and running. And without, of course, your donations, it's really, really hard for us to continue doing Inside the Eye Live. Really. I mean, we work very hard to bring you a top-level product and cutting-edge information, unique angles, unique takes, mix in a little humor, a little fun. Come do this every Saturday morning, literally every Saturday morning now, starting now for our eighth year. And that we do this because we work on a platform, and the platform has a steady an audience ready for me when I show up. Generally, we've got, I think Pastor Eli is leading off before me. I don't follow it too much because I'm preparing for my show. But, you know, the audience is there. It, of course, comes Saturday morning, it grows. And we have a great time, and then we get off and off to our own lives again. But we need the platform, everybody. And so please do what you can and sponsor the show. Again, I owe somebody a thank you, by the way, for sponsoring this show. Somebody sent me some sponsorship money this week, and I forgot to pull that name down. But nonetheless, sponsor the network, everybody. It's so darn important. So darn important that you sponsor the network and keep the platform alive, up and running. It's a bit expensive per se, in appearance wise for some, but folks, it's very, very critical that the network is alive, up and running, because without that, it's going to be very difficult for us to again have the opportunity to continue to bring you all of this quality product that we do. I'm not on video now, so I can kind of, what's going on here? I forgot my password. That's not a good thing. You know, I hate that. I got so many accounts, guys. I don't know about you, but I've got so many accounts. I forget everything. Let me try one more time on a different computer. And let me see. Oh, just 1 second, everybody. I want to pull some information down. And it's loading. We should be quickly here. I think this computer's got the cookies saved, so it's going to be fast. And it's pulling up. So, guys, again, we just want to say then equally, yeah, it's here. Activity. Ah, okay, from a Mr. Jeffrey. I'll just say Jeffrey D. Just want to say thank you very much. Jeffrey sent in $10 this week, again, to support Inside the Eye Live directly. So, Jeffrey, thank you so much for that. You know, I've been paying out a lot this past month, so we really appreciate the support there equally directly to Inside the Eye Live, because the money is plowed back into the product, believe me. What else do we want to say? Oh, the ITIL Cat Report, it's brought to us by North Kakalaki Trading Post, good services and solutions for all creatures, great and small. It's independently located at the corner of Walk and Don't Walk, and by Blackbird Dines Breakfast Club, a radio show so by Frederick C. Blackburn. He's an NSA whistleblower, a former 32-degree Mason in North Carolina, former North Carolina House candidate, and, of course, his show, Blackbird Nine's Breakfast Club, can be heard every Thursday, or is it Wednesday? No, every Wednesday evening at 8 o'clock to 10 o'clock p.m. on the Spreaker radio network. I know Jeffrey was saying, Fetch, can you like you and Blackbird and Andy and some others get together? Because you guys got some great programming, and I thank you for that, Jeffrey. Really, thank you so much. And it's an idea. Trust me, we've been thinking about such ideas, but nonetheless, Blackbird Nines Trading Post, Blackbird Nines Breakfast Club, and North Kakalaki Trading Post, again, sponsors the ITIL Cat Report every Saturday. And he's been doing this for years and years and years. And my goodness, what a great sponsor he's been. And we're so happy to see his success. Frederick, we have gone and looked up your Twitter account. You are shadow banned. As of yesterday, you were also on a search ban. As of today, it looks like that search ban has been taken down. Man, that bird of mine is very loud. Hold on a second, guys. I want to shut my door because that bird is so loud. Not sure that's going to help us, but we have a bird, you know, and this bird is like crazy. So loud, and it's only one bird, but it's like, man, it's an alarm clock. You know, as dawn starts to break, he's up and running. Anyways, the ITIL Cat Report is very quiet, but we do have some developments. So right now, one eye is camped out on my couch in my office, and he's got such a big, long foot. He's kind of funny, actually, looking that way. And Bruiser, we had to move Bruiser because he was in the window. And the window I have to shut for the show because it's daytime hours here. It's only like, 5:40 in the afternoon? And there's a lot of street noise, a lot of honking, a lot of mosque playing. A lot of that goes down here. So I have to shut everything. It kind of cuts all the wind off, makes it hot here. But we had to kick Bruiser out. But he loves to sit in the window where I have a couple pillows up there. And he just camps out all day and just kind of like takes in the breeze and takes in the sounds of the streets. And all that's all well and good. So we're happy for Bruiser. But the new kitten, the one that we've been talking about that doesn't have a name, if you've been following the show here, we had a huge party, as we discussed yesterday. And some like all these guests are arriving, and the kitten is just sitting there sleeping right next to the door. It's like, dude, get out of the way, man. But he doesn't move. And people are saying, is this your cat? And we're like, well, no, not really, but we kind of adopted it. And I can't let the cat in the house because Bruiser will just go crazy and beat the heck out of it. So I gave it a name, though. It's got a new name. It's called Spikers. His new name is Spikers. And the reason for Spikers is because every time he sees me, his tail goes straight up in the air. And the hair on his tail just kind of like spikes straight out. Kind of like spiked hair. If you remember the 80s with the spiked haircut. So I kind of said, you know what? You're going to be Spikers, dude. So Spikers is his new name. He's not there right now, but he was there earlier today. He got a great pet session. He loves that stuff. I'll tell you, he goes absolutely nuts for attention. What a sweetheart little cat he is. He's almost too rambunctious for attention, but he's been enjoying his time, I guess. You know, he gets free food now. We've been giving him better quality food, quite frankly. So he's getting some of the trimmings from the table that's cat-worthy and some of the bones that Bruiser can't eat because of he's got like only a couple teeth left and one eye just kind of snubs his nose at. This kitten, he's saying, oh, thank you very much. So we give him all some of these table scraps, and he's having a great time with some of the chicken bones from yesterday. If you can imagine all the chicken from the party, all the fish from the party, he got fed well yesterday. So he was doing great. Bruiser's fat. He's getting big. One eye's been camping out. One eye's so cute. As soon as you sit down at the dinner table to have dinner, one eye is literally on your lap or on the chair next to you, looking up at you saying, okay, I'm here. And he did that again this morning for breakfast, but we just didn't have any cat food. I mean, it was fried rice, you know, and there's maybe some little sausage. And sure, we gave him the sausage and he said, okay, thank you very much. But he's so darn cute, guys. One Eye's a cool guy. One Eye's like my favorite. Although Bruiser's a sweetheart, but One Eye's my favorite. Anyways, that's the ITIL Cat Report. Again, it's proudly sponsored by North Kakalaki Trading Post, good services and solutions for all creatures, great and small, and by Blackbird Nines Breakfast Club, a radio show hosted by Blackbird, Frederick C. Blackburn, really. And again, he's an NSA whistleblower, a former 32-degree Mason, and a former North Carolina House candidate. And you can, again, catch all of this on Blackbird Nines. Blackbird Nine, you know, I'm saying this out of my head, man. I'm just Blackbird Nine's Breakfast Club, BlackbirdNineTradingPost.org. That's right, BlackbirdNineTradingPost.org. I should have this all set up, but I've got all these computers set up, and not everything is on this new computer. I guess, cut everything over. Anyways, it is about time for probably one of the more popular parts of the show. If I can just get my fingers to do the talking here. And, you know, I've got a touch screen. It's a good thing my fingers are working because otherwise it wouldn't work.
Oh, I get involved. It's like another show.
Oy vey.
Oy vey.
Oy vey, everybody.
Hollywood is run by Jews. It's owned by Jews. Very goddamn angry at some of the Jews.
I thrive on boyum ears.
Oy vey.
Oy vey, everybody.
The Oy Vey Moment is proudly sponsored by Andrew Carrington Hitchcock, author of The Synagogue of Satan, Updated, Expanded, and Uncensored. The Synagogue of Satan, Updated, Expanded, and Uncensored features a rapturous 144,000 words that is replete with additional articles never before seen in print. And after having its distribution banned by Amazon and Lulu, The Synagogue of Satan, Updated, Expanded, and Uncensored is now available from Barnes Review at barnesreview.org. Order your copy today, won't you? Of course, don't forget to listen to Andy's The Andrew Carrington Hitchcock Show, which streams every Monday through Friday at 10 o'clock a.m. to 11 o'clock a.m. Eastern on Eurofolk Radio at eurofolkradio.com. To listen, simply visit eurofolkradio.com during showtime and click on the Listen Live Now link, or visit andrewcarringtonhitchcock.com for Andy's free show archives, which comprises one of the most extensive guest lists in the alternative media.
And this week's Oy Vey Moment is coming to us out of the UK. And, of course, in the UK, they're very heavily involved in an anti-Corbyn campaign, which seeks to paint the Corbynites and Jeremy Corbyn as this massive anti-Semite. There was a story that came out, really a tweet that I saw, that the Jewish community was complaining because Corbyn did not appear to some nondescript, exceedingly non, it's just nondescript Jewish meeting, and instead he met with the Emir of Qatar. And I'm like, poof. You Jews are really freaking that stupid. I mean, here he's meeting with the head of state of one of the richest nations in the world, but no, he's supposed to cancel that meeting to come to some stupid little meeting of whining and convention Jews about anti-Semitism. That's kind of how Jews are, but that's not actually the Oy Vey Moment. The Oy Vey Moment is about a Mr. Damien Endicott. His name again, Damien Endicott. He is a UK Labour Party. He has been suspended for a Facebook post saying Jews drink blood. That's right. He was suspended for a Facebook report that says Jews drink blood. Now, in his defense, he is saying, I didn't put that in there. I didn't do it. But anyways, British Labour Party's, again, suspended this councillor for sharing this post, not posting itself, but sharing a post saying that it is a Jewish ritual to drink blood. And within it, it called for the execution of Talmud Jews. And he said someone else posted this from his computer. And here's the thing I have learned. You know what? In today's world of hacking, and the fact that Facebook has no integrity, it should not, and you really can't assume that he's not telling the truth. I'll tell you what, I have had situations in my early days where Jews took something, they posted it under my name, under a different forum somewhere out there. Then where I had a very large layer of success, they came back and they said, okay, Jew Dennis, you know, the post, I'm like, we should bash all Jews in the face, and we should round them up and gas them all, and all this stupid Jewish stuff that you hear in the Jewish community, that I wouldn't talk like that, you know. But one of these Jews wrote something like that, put it in another forum, then they copied and pasted that particular forum. And they went to a forum where I was popular, went to the owner of the forum, said, see, this is what Fetch is saying out there, man. You need to ban this guy. And that's how underhanded and disgusting Jewish people can be, folks. It's just a reality. Deal with it. They're not good people, as I've been saying. Now, here we've got a situation where Mr. Damien Endicott is claiming that somebody else posted from his computer calling for the execution of Talmud Jews. Now, here's the thing, though. Jews, directly, they know what Talmud is. They know how sick it is. They know how evil it is. They know how sinister it is. They know this, folks. It's not like we, who are some of the more advanced educators on this subject to you, who are learning about this topic. Folks, Jews know what's going on. They get it, folks. And if you knew some of the disgusting filth that goes on with some of these Talmudic Jews, you actually would not find it to be so far of a stretch to go ahead and take some of these guys and execute them. You actually would look. You're not going to, I know a lot of you, you're not into to raping 6-year-old girls. You're not into that. I'm assuming you're not. And if some guy who is a Talmudic Jew does that, sure, I bet you would want to see that person executed. Some of you might. I don't think you'd have a problem with that. Others, there is something known as Jewish ritual murder. They're trying to say it doesn't exist, but it does exist. I mean, come on. How many hundreds of thousands of kids go missing every year? Who's taking them? And it's been talked about and reported about for years and years and years and thousands of years. It doesn't happen here in the Middle East. Why is that? But it happens where we have a bunch of Jews running around. I'm curious. Here in the Middle East, heck, the kids are out there all day long, kind of like how it was when we were growing up, but it was still dangerous when I was growing up. The girl next door, she disappeared. Literally just out of nowhere. Nobody saw her. She just disappeared. So, folks, these things do happen. Now, if you find that somebody is actually using ritualized blood from children and they are Talmudists, are you going to say they should not be executed, or are you going to say they should be executed? See, so when you really look into the dark, evil nature of what goes on deep within Talmud, folks, this actually wouldn't be such a bad thing. You would not be looking like, oh, this is terrible. He should be suspended. No, you wouldn't do that. Now, in this guy, this post appeared yesterday, Friday, on Facebook page of, again, Mr. Damien Endicott. He is a counselor in Bognor Regis, which is a town on England's southern coast. He removed the post and told the Jewish Chronicle that he did not, or he had not posted it, and that he lived in a shared house and has a computer that does not have passwords. Though that may actually be the case. The statement that was made wasn't by myself. He said, I don't actually share anti-Semitic views at all. Well, now you should start to understand, Mr. Endicott, that you need to have anti-Semitic views, because even though you are innocent, you're still going to be destroyed anyways. You're going to be losing your position. You're going to be suspended because Jews don't care. They are all about controlling the message and destroying everybody that gets in their way. Now, a Labor Party spokesperson told Jewish newspapers, are there newspapers that aren't Jewish? But at least it says Jewish newspapers here, that Endicott was suspended from the party pending an investigation. Now, the Labor Party takes all complaints of anti-Semitism extremely seriously, and we are committed to challenging and campaigning against it in all its forms. Well, first of all, to the Labor Party, why do you take it so seriously? Why is it that you are given this hyper minor people so much credence and credibility? Why don't you start serving the vast majority of the British people out there? Why don't you look into anti-British behavior by Britain's Jews and start doing something about it? Why is it that Jews are coming first and foremost? This tells us there is a serious problem with Labor leadership. Not like Jews claim there is, oh, they're so anti-Semitic. No, they're not anti-Semitic enough. They should be working for the British people, not Jewish people who, by Jewish definitions, aren't even British. They may claim British, but they're not. They are, again, mixture in Jerusalem. They are alien by their own religious doctrine and beliefs. They can never, ever be truly loyal to the UK, period. It won't happen. They will be loyal to themselves. That's how it works in the Jewish community, folks. And if you haven't figured that out, you got a long ways to go. Seriously. What it says here, he says, this is done by only by Talmud Jews. I don't know what he's talking about here. He said, Antikos' apparent commentary said, Talmud Jews are parasites. It goes on to say that Talmud Jews devalue the lives of non-Jews. Well, all of this is actually factually true, folks. Talmud Jews are parasites. Talmud Jews do devalue the lives of non-Jews. And it's not even a secret. Everybody knows it. So why are you going to suspend somebody for talking about something that is factually true? Why are we destroying our ability to get our message out? It's the Fetch. Tonight, the Online. It's your media for the politically aware. That's the Oy Vey Moment. Back with more. Right. All right, everybody, welcome back. It's the Fetch, Inside the Eye, live intelligent media for the politically aware again. Today's date is Saturday, July the 28th, 2018, and a good Saturday morning to all of you listening again in the United States and Canada, and a good late afternoon to early evening, as it is here now, to all of you listening in European and Asian time zones. And so, you know, Europe, it's been a little bit tough in Europe. They've been going through, you know, we've been having some fantastic weather here, but that's really not been the case over in Europe. It's been just ridiculous. You know, we've had a massive fire in Greece. The big blame game is going on there, but it's not just Greece. It's really throughout all of Europe now. But that fire up in Greece, 82 people so far have died. Deputy Citizen Protection Minister, there's a name for you, Mikos Toskas, claimed there were serious signs of arson. Others pointed the finger at the government over its very poor fire prevention measures. Of course, they've got to feed the banks. You know, you got to feed these Jewish banks. You can't actually put money into your own society when you're feeding the banks all the time. Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras said he accepted political responsibility. Whatever. That's just a wank-wank type of statement when I hear politicians say stuff like that. But nonetheless, it's been very, very difficult, for sure. In Greece, you know, there was really some kind of heart-wrenching slash macabre reports of people coming out saying, hey, as they were able to escape, their family and friends could not, and you could actually still hear them screaming as they were burned alive in this fire. So it was really some very tragic, really tragic words coming out of Greece this week. In Germany, they've been suffering with temperatures above 102 degrees Fahrenheit. And these are near record temperatures, and it's forecast to reach again as high as 39 degrees today. Firefighters are battling quite a few fires there, one in Fichtenwald, southwest of Berlin, and in northern Saxony-Anhalt. A public broadcaster, ARD, posted a picture of a fire engine, believe it or not, a fire engine, filling up with water from a swimming pool, but in Berlin, police were actually using a water cannon to drench the parched lawn of Germany's Reichstag. I think I actually said that one pretty good, huh? Reichstag Parliament building. And officials in Hamburg canceled the annual fireworks due to fears the dry ground would catch fire. Meanwhile, up in the UK, police used a water cannon to drench the parched lawn. No, that's not the right story. In the UK, they called yesterday Furnace Friday. That's right. They had a catchy name, Furnace Friday, and there was some relief from what British media dubbed again Furnace Friday, as yesterday London got hit by an afternoon downpour. And earlier, meteorologists said that the all-time British record of 38.5 degrees C, which would be 102 or so, could be broken. So, but whether it did or not, that didn't get reported here. Cross-channel rail operator Eurotunnel canceled thousands of tickets after extreme temperatures and malfunctioning air conditioning disrupted its services. London's fire brigade asked councils to ban barbecues in public parks after an increase in call-outs for fires being started. High temperatures forced the famously conservative Marylebone Cricket Club into a very rare concession, allowing members to attend a match without a jacket. Oh, my goodness. You could actually go do the match without a jacket. How cool is that? Netherlands said that they have counted so far 1,143 forest fires in the first 25 days of July, compared with 187 in the whole of July of 2017. and the country has registered its hottest night on record from Thursday to Friday this week of just under 75 degrees. Netherlands, Sweden has set up a barbecue ban, so you're not allowed to barbecue in Sweden. Sweden's authorities said 17 forest fires were still burning in the country after others were put out this week, and the country has been hitting highs of around 34.6, so I don't know, 98 degrees or so there. Neighboring Finland said it would send 35 firefighters to Sweden. Another interesting thing about the firefighting going on in Sweden is the Poles, from Warsaw, et cetera, but from Poland, you had a convoy of Polish firefighting vehicles going to Sweden to help fight these fires. And the word is like, well, you know, the Swedes and their government are so incompetent and so inept that they will spend billions of dollars, literally billions of euros, on refugees. But these idiots can't afford a few firefighting engines to go take care of their own business when something goes down. And that I guess, is just kind of par for the course for these leftist-dominated nutcase governments that we have running all over the place. And, of course, when I say that, I guess we can actually kind of fall back to Israel itself, you know, if we really wanted to. Latvia. They had contained a 1,000-acre-hectare, really, peat bog wildfire. So that was good for them. France has been, pretty well boiling or whatever. I don't know what you want to call it there, but they've had a huge heat wave. But they also got a bit of a downpour yesterday. So, too, we don't have any listeners in France. You know, I'll be honest, we don't. It's like if we get someone from France, it's like, I don't know. It's rare. I got lots of UK and Canada and Australia and New Zealand and Germany and Sweden and Denmark and China even, some Japan. But France, they never show up. I don't know what's the matter with the French. Just they're French. Maybe that's what's wrong. Nothing to you French Canadians out there, of course. So it's been very difficult. Swiss weather authorities also saying that, you know, they're projecting a heat wave, you know, warnings down in the south. So, folks, if you're in Europe, and we know a lot of you folks are, at least 30%, you know, you guys got it tough. Don't come to Amman. It's crowded enough, quite frankly, but we are having unbelievably fantastic weather here in Amman. I cannot tell you how nice really it is. I'm going out tonight. In fact, you know, I got thrashed, folks, at that party yesterday. I got thrashed, literally. You know, just I drank too much. Singing, I honestly didn't sing. We had some really good singers here yesterday. My goodness, man. I'm like, excuse me, can you sing another song? That was good. Literally, we had some great singers. We had the top Roman Catholic priest here. He does his own radio show, and he came in to play, to do invocation or blessing for the girls. That was her birthday yesterday. Actually, her birthday's today, but we celebrated yesterday. But he came in, he did some songs, and he's got a great voice. He's got a radio show, and he's kind of professional. He knows what he's doing. But we had some really great, great singers yesterday. It was kind of amazing, quite frankly. Normally, we don't have that many great singers. We get a few, but not like the whole. It's like the whole audience was good. I'll tell you. What else is news? Let's go back to the story about social media. And part of the reason we want to focus on this is because we are in an – To steal an Alex Jones term, but it's kind of true. We're in an information war. And this war is being waged by essentially a very hostile, largely, see, I'm being fair here, largely Jewish elite. And, of course, they're rectified goy. We call them rectified goy because that's what Jews call them. But they're rectified goy agents. And these would be a lot of your politicians that put Jewish interests ahead of the interests of their own people. It's very critical that we are able to magnify our message. Now, a lot of you tell me, Fetch, you got a really good show. You've got a lot of great insights. You've got a lot of unique ways of putting things. And we are always like saying, why can't we just grow this darn audience? Why can't it grow? Why can't it grow? And part of the reason is because our messages are being stifled. And the new shadow banning reports coming out of what, you know, coming out from Twitter is absolutely stunning. Literally, virtually every, I mean, I don't want to say just virtually every, because I haven't personally taken a look, but you have a situation where a major media company like Twitter is deciding for the public, us, the users of that platform, what we can say, how we can say it. But here's the thing. If you're going to sit there and, like, take the Fetch, for instance, yesterday, this morning, I woke up to a legal letter from Twitter. This happens a lot to me, folks. I get a lot of legal letters from Twitter. And what it says, typically, it's a form letter, but it says that your tweet has been reported for violation of some nondescript law, typically within the United Kingdom. Fancy that, you know. The birthplace of freedom of speech, basically, and it always seems to come from the UK. But I get this legal notice, and it says, you know, your tweet on this day, activity from your tweets has been reported as being in violation of laws of the UK, and we have gone in and studied, you know, whatever. I'm just paraphrasing here, but we've gone, looked through your activity, and we have found you are not in violation of any laws, but please be advised that we may need to restrict some of your posting inside of the UK to comply with UK law. Okay, fine. But I get that all the time. Now, what happened was, I'm a type of guy that believes that we must work to control the propaganda. And that means that we have to get out there just as forcefully as the enemy is, which is largely a Jewish enemy, and counter the propaganda that they're putting out. In other words, there's two elements to information war. One is the proactive side, and that is where you're putting the information out fresh, virgin, so to speak. And the other is the rebuttal side, where you're taking a point of view and you are rebutting it. They're uniquely separate. Now, what happens a lot is that the Israeli Hasbara trash that is out there, and there's a lot of this trash out there, they will put out a consistent and steady stream of Israel's the greatest thing since sliced cheese. Isn't it wonderful? 220 of these people just made Aliyah, and they're singing Hatikvavika or whatever their national anthem is. And oh, isn't it wonderful? And look at how wonderful they look in their military uniforms. And or if it's like 16 kites were reported in the skies today over Gaza, and the IDF had to shoot 7 of them down because they had fire coming from the tails of the kites. You know, oh, this is terrorism. I'm like, you guys are talking, you're calling a kite terrorism. But it's this level of stuff it's on. It's droning. It drones, drones, drones. So what you do is I'm very good at the rebuttal part of it, where I take the words that they say and I spin it and I give it back to them. And typically, though, I'm like, I know I'm doing a good job with my words. I'm good with words, but I'm not growing. Nothing's happening. And then this shadow ban came out, and then it said, you know, are you shadow banned? And here, go take a look, shadowbanning.ua or something like that. And now come to find out that I'm shadow banned. Blackbird 9 is shadow banned. That's Frederick's, you know, Blackbird 9. Andrew Carrington, so many people in my network are shadow banned. And what that means is my message only goes out to my followers. So if my followers aren't online that day, nobody sees it, because it's basically being put into a tiny little box. Now, I'm using that platform with an expectation that my message is going to be treated in the same fairness as my opponent. But that's not what's happening. Our messages are being discriminated against. They are discriminating against us, plain and simple. They're saying, you can speak over here, but you guys, you shut your mouth, you can't speak. But they can't say that to our faces because, hey, that will go down really bad. So what do? They basically put us into a little box. You can actually sit there and send something to the president of the United States, which may be critically important, but you know what? You're not going to get your message out because Twitter decides it's not important enough because you're on a shadow ban. Twitter is deciding for everybody what we can and we can't read. Twitter decides who will and will not receive something. At some point, folks, we need to take this to toe. Now, you want to talk about executing people? I know, Fetch, you're not supposed to be getting
too radical here, but when you have someone like this, Jack,
hi, I'm Jack at Twitter,
and he is physically working to control the narrative on his platform that twists and turns and bends the message, the public message, in a way that harms our political process here. Because everybody knows Twitter is by and large used by a large number of people for political purposes. Trump's kind of made this kind of famous, right? Then that person is now, he's injecting himself as one person into our political process. He's harming our political interests. At what point do the people rise up and say enough is enough? This guy needs to go. And how that guy needs to go is should be the choice of the people. And I'm going to support it. With all other asides, I'm going to support it. You want to engage in harming everybody? And all the harm that you cause, you want to pretend like it's your right? Listen, dude, to the Twitter people out there, and I see these H-1B Indian nutcases, these kids from India. Really? Now, this kind of pisses me off. Because you've got O'Keefe's, I don't know the name of it, but O'Keefe's project, catching these Indian engineers working in America, bragging about how they just basically can turn you off here, they shut you down here, they just turn this off there, now you're basically in this little shadow. And like, you're coming to our country, you little frickin', really? You come to our country and you're going to harm our interests? Really? I swear, dudes, I want to go take that frickin' Indian, I want him investigated, and I want him frickin' deported. If I find that he is on some type of H-1B visa and he is working to undermine our country, using our laws within our systems, and he's going to sit there and he's going to be some imported piece of crap, and he's going to actually do that to us on our nation? Folks, when we as Americans and British and Germans, okay, and I can speak from vast amounts of experience on this, when we come over to Jordan or we go to Saudi Arabia or we go to Iraq or somewhere else, we do not engage in the political process. We do not sit there and work to try to make the political process bend to our personal interests or those of our employer. We don't do that. That'll get you like whacked immediately. You don't do it, folks. So why are we allowing this Indian piece of crap to come? Seriously, an Indian piece of crap to come to our nation and do that? Think about it. These guys are paying enormous money to come over and subjugate Americans within their own country. And then these tech companies want to sit there and tell us we need more H-1B visas for what? To engage in behavior that's anti-American, and it's easier perhaps for you to get the Indian guy to do it because it's going to be harder to get the white conservative American to do it for you? These things you got to start factoring into the equation because they factor it. Trust me, no permutation is ever left. Well, I won't say no, but the vast numbers of permutations are going to be explored by those involved in these agendas against you. Every little minute, because they had nothing to do all day but sit there and think, how can we screw you people? And so they'll just sit there and say, well, what if this happens? What if this happens? They do their risk analysis. What if this gets out? Okay, we need a, okay, what if that get out? What? They're asking all these what's. Literally asking all these what's. Folks, this is serious stuff. For a company to use America's internet protocol, our internet protocol, folks, we Americans, in other words, they want to say Twitter, it's our platform. Take it the next level, everybody. It's our internet protocol. It is not Twitter's internet protocol. Are they paying you and me and the taxpayers royalties on internet protocol every time they send a packet out? It's your product. You know, literally, you, the taxpayer, funded this in America anyways. And another thing that kind of ticks me off about this stuff, I'll do a radio show like here, and I'll stream it live. And I've got 3 hours worth of content. And there's 12 seconds of some piece from some Jewish media person that's got inside the show and I don't really know about it. And they want to take all the money from my 3 hours of effort for their 12 seconds?
Where is the proportionality here? How do they get off just stealing everything from us? See, these people are so disgustingly dishonest, they become a pariah. And honestly, it's justified that that you treat them as a pariah. They're telling you right now, you can go on, you can work your butt off, you can create all this content, you can do everything you can. And they're sitting there on the side and they're just shadow banning. They're putting you into a little box. They're saying only your users or your followers are ever going to see you. Well, gee, if I post one day and, you know, not everybody's online like worshiping Twitter every day. So if they don't see me that day, they'll never see it, right? It disappears. And I don't reach any new audience. I'm not reaching, let's say I respond to someone with 60,000 followers. They don't care. Because you can respond all day to those 60,000 followers, and guess what? You're only going to be read by those who follow you. You're never going to be able to reach the extended audience. You're never going to be able to influence the extended audience. Well, Twitter is something that's been around a long time, and people who then jump in late to Twitter aren't going to have the same audience that you would have if you were there a long time ago. And then when Twitter turns around and they start to censor and take away and destroy and silence and ban people with 30,000, 40,000, 50,000 readers. And some of these people were following me. So now when I respond to them, they're now banned. I lose all of that audience. And Jews want to sit there and say, oh, well, you know, it's just your fault. No, this isn't my fault. This is a planned, coordinated conspiracy against us. And anybody who says it's your fault is being intellectually violent to the rest of us, including the targeted person that they said it to. And remember, violence is violence. Violence is violence. And how you respond to violence, if it's violent, you're being self-defensive, as far as I'm concerned. And I don't care what happens to these people. Because if you're going to be intellectually violent to somebody, if you're going to be dishonest, One Eye's trying to get out. Hang tight, One Eye. Coming up to a break real soon. One Eye. One Eye. Okay, be patient, One Eye. He wants out. I've got all the doors shut because it's like too much noise outside. But folks, see, I find that this is very repulsive from the Jewish community now. When I go and look at all of these Jewish Hasbara accounts, none of them are shadow banned. They're perfectly clean. Then somebody like me comes along, shadow banned. Oh, is that why I can never seem to influence these Jewish arguments? Is that why Twitter comes back and says, well, we have determined that you haven't really done anything wrong? Why? Because they're not following me, so nobody's reading it anyways. So rather than make a big scene about everything by starting to ban everything, they just block. Well, I mean, I'm not banning, but in other words, how do I want to word that to where it comes out clear? Twitter knows that when I respond to a Jewish group, like some of these organized nutcases that run all over the UK, there's so much organized Jewish crap in the UK. Folks, it's as bad as America, quite frankly. Jews don't work in the UK. They just sit there and advocate for their own superiority in the UK, kind of like America. But when I respond to these people, Twitter knows. Nobody sees it. Nobody sees it. Literally nobody sees it. They know that. Maybe you're going to get where before I was getting 200, and I'm not even a big player, folks. I've probably been banned from day one. I wouldn't doubt it now that I look back on my time there. I mean, before I would get 249,000, I'm like, why can't I get my reach higher? Now it's down to like 40,000. Same with my web properties. I used to be this, and now I'm down 60%. Everything is down 60%. This is like a major coordinated campaign to silence and neutralize our message to the greatest degree possible. Now, some of the ways to get around that, folks, share, 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 share. Don't like, share. Get this information out. Share it with people. Get it out. It's advertising. Word of mouth is always still going to be better than everything else. Because, folks, we can only do so much. As people who craft the message, we can just do so much. It's the Fetch. I'm back with more right after this. Inside the Eye Live, intelligent media. It's the Fetch, Inside the Eye, live intelligent media for the politically aware, right here on Revolution Radio at revolution.radio. Again, one of the largest listener-sponsored and supported networks going right now on the World Wide Web. And again, don't forget to support the network if you're out and about thinking, who can I donate some money to? Always send it to the Fetch. Nah, I'm teasing you. I really am teasing you. But we appreciate the donations. Trust me, it helps so much. And today's subject, a little bit about, social media, how it's been negatively impacting the ability for us to get information out and about. And here's something that I'm not sure how Facebook is doing it, but I do know Twitter. What we do know about the Jewish community at large and the Jewish, and there's trolls on both sides of the network, folks. You know, there's trolls on both sides, and I'm going to respect that. Some could call me a troll in some respects. I've been dealing with trolls for so long, I kind of get how it works, and I don't have a problem behaving in a way that counters what is BS propaganda by Israeli groups, Jewish groups. I stay out of the leftist LGBT nutcase group because they're very violent, sick people from my experiences. So I just try to stay away from their energy. They're disgusting. There's a vile darkness. Even Israelis don't have the same darkness that the LGBT people have. They carry with them some type of strange aura that comes through their words. I can't put my finger on it. But you know what we're learning about Twitter is what they're doing. Now, let me first go back a step and explain, like, just to support this Jewish whining part. You know, we know that Jews make up the smallest percentage of one of the smallest percentage of population in Europe as far as minorities go. Yet they are by far the number one group that reports things to the police. Literally the number one. Now, one of the things that is part of these new anti-Semitic definitions is that you are not allowed to say that Jew A over there is more loyal to Israel than he is to his own country. If you do that, it may actually be a very true statement, by the way. It could be such to the point that that Jew A is actually technically a traitor, although to me Jews can't really be traitors because they're already aliens and should be treated as aliens, but that's not how it's working today. But let's say we take Jew A over here, and he says he's involved in treason against, let's say in this case, the British people, since this is where a lot of this is playing out right now. It's clear anybody that is working on behalf of organizations that are pro-Israel are putting Israel ahead of their nation. If it were not the case, they would be doing pro-British type of work, not pro-Israel type of work. So pretty much every NGO that is working for pro-Israeli groups or pro-Israeli interests in the UK, it's very rational and pragmatic to view them as being more loyal to Israel than to the United Kingdom, period. Because if you try to criticize them, they're going to come after you, even though you're a British citizen. So they're going to be putting they and their pro-Israeli work ahead of you and your pro-British work. So you have every right at this stage to say, hey, they're more loyal to Israel than they are to us. You have that right. Now, in the UK, you don't really kind of have that right. You have the right, but you're going to be given a backlash from this hyper whining, complaining Jewish community. Now, in this case, I mentioned to a Jewish group, I said, hey, if it's factually correct that Jew A is engaging in activity that is clearly showing that this person supports Israel more than the UK, and I'm factually correct about it, you want me to say that I can't say it because I'm quote-unquote anti-Semitic? That's just simply wrong. And I did it in a kind of a caustic way, but that's basically exactly what I said if you were to tear what I said apart. And this guy says, this is the most vile anti-Semitic thing I've ever heard in my life. Have good luck. You're good. Have good luck or good time being reported. And he reports me to the Metro Police. I'm like, I just shot back. Are you trying to tell us that the police in the United, and I sent it to the police equal. I said, are you guys trying to say that the police is nothing but the thug arm of the Jewish community of the UK? Is that what you guys are telling me as an American here? That you're just nothing but a thug arm for Jews in Britain? Really? And I said to the British police, I said, you know what? You guys embarrass me. Literally, you guys embarrass me because that Jew is coming to you whining like a classless little whining loser, and he's not in your country legally. Can you tell me where the expulsion order that allows this guy to stay or where that expulsion order was rescinded? There aren't supposed to be any Jews even here making these problems. I said, if I'm an American and I'm looking at you, I'm saying, would you freaking go do the law? Arrest this Jew until we can figure out what to do with him. Because he's here illegally. The law is the law is the law. Don't sit there and try to tell me, oh, you got to follow this anti-Semitic crap from these Jews that don't seem to want to follow the law. They're not supposed to be in the UK, period. And so I'm telling the Metro Police, what are you talking about? Go arrest this guy. Don't talk to me. Go arrest him. What are you doing? As an American, I'm thinking you're an idiot. Go arrest this guy. And then I said, yeah, you might get fired, dude. Yeah, you might get fired. I respect that. But you know what? You're going to create a hell of a scene if you did it. And people are really going to start to look up about this. And then you're going to have all these Jews saying, you know, we got to get that rescinded. We're going to have to get that expulsion order rescinded. And then they're going to draw to the attention that everything that they do there is illegal because they're not supposed to be there. And yet the Jewish people, they don't seem to grasp this. They think they're entitled. They think they're freaking entitled to tell the British people what they can and can't say on their own soil. And as an American, I'm looking at my British friends thinking, what is the matter with you guys? As a collective society, I know within my group people speak out. And I know within my group like people like Jez Turner are now behind bars. But at the same time, this is the war we are in. Why now are not 20 Jews taken out just for the same reason? Why not? Again, the law is the law. You're not even supposed to be here. We know, of course, the UK, a lot of the US is run by these pedophilia, you can call them satanic, whatever you want to call them, groups. Interesting, they actually found something from like the Babylonian Talmud. It goes back some 2,000 years. They found it. And you know what it had on it? It had the upside down pentagram with the goat. So when you want to look at all these Satan-worshipping occultists over there that do this and that, hey, maybe it does have its roots directly into Judaism. Had another interesting story about this Jew and Zionist stuff. And I'm talking Jew, because I think you need to properly identify the target. I know it's uncomfortable. It's not uncomfortable in this audience. But it's uncomfortable to people out there. And the person says to me, I agree with everything you're saying, but it's Zionist and not Jew. And I'm like, well, you know what? These guys have been getting kicked out of 300 plus countries and locations for thousands of years now, long before the word Jew and Zionist was ever created. So go ahead and you use what word you want to use, and I'm going to use my freedom to use the word I want to use. What I do know is that Jews don't care if you call them Zionists. They go bananas. They go freaking monkey ape, you know what, if you call them a Jew, though. So I know which word is more effective, which is used to draw them out even more. They don't like being called what they are. I don't know what's in it, that word that is so metaphysically repulsive to even Jews when somebody else says it, but I know they get repulsed. I know they react. I know they respond. You know, going back to Twitter, you know, here's the thing about the Jewish community, and it's not just Jewish people, folks. It's their minority extremists, which includes the LGBT community, okay? And they have their agents everywhere. When you look at a Twitter, it's the ADL that's deciding what is and isn't allowable. It's not you, it's not me, it's the ADL. It's Jewish people, Jewish extremists like the ADL deciding what is and is not acceptable speech. and what is and does not keep people safe. It's not us. Because we're not whiners. We're not complainers. We are competitive. We don't mind competing. We don't mind working hard. But we want to play by a fair rules. We want to play where the deck is even, where I have just as much a chance as you to go win. I don't want to have to always play in a sea where Mr. Jew's got this thing so rigged against us that we just like continue to scratch our heads till our foreheads bleed. It's unethical. It's unfair. It's discriminatory. And quite frankly, to me, Facebook, Twitter, Google, Alphabet, all of these tech companies that are engaged in all of this quasi-banning under the guise of social justice nonsense should be taken to the courts to the fullest extent of the law by not individuals but by our governments and handed, and literally their, excuse my expression, their asses handed to them. Because this is creating a situation where we work under good faith with the proper intentions. We want to be able to get our message out just like everybody else. We know that our political enemies are using these platforms to get their message out, yet they are given 100% rein to do as they say or say what they want, wish I should say, put it that way. They can say as they want, and there's no rebuttal. And if we do rebut it, it's just pigeonholed, where maybe our political adversaries on the same tweet can reach 1,000 people, 40,000 people. We're getting stuck to reaching 30, 40, 600. It's patently discriminatory. It's patently unfair. Another thing, the way a lot of these algorithms are being written out there is that people who are downvoted or complained about or blocked, they are being given a lower rating. Now, if you knew this was the case, okay, if you knew this was the case, you could then easily have your people out there, which are organized, like the LGBT community, like the Jewish community, and they could sit there and start complaining and blocking and doing everything to everybody ahead of the game so that everybody that we don't know the game is all of a sudden we're getting hammered. We aren't reaching our audiences anymore. And we can't figure out why. We see it's not happening, but we can't put our finger on it. Well, now maybe you're starting to get a handle as to why Jews whine and complain so much. Because the algorithms are specifically tailored to target you by the Jewish people, by the LGBT community. And we would like to know also how much of this is manually done. How many people in the American conservative movement, the ones opposed even to people like, they don't even like people like me, folks. They think I'm too extreme. And that's fine. I don't have a problem with that. I still share more with them than I do with the LGBT community. Yet they're being also blocked equally. Hundreds and hundreds and thousands of people in the conservative movement in America are being blocked from having a voice at the political table here simply because companies led by dark, unknown forces, except for we know the ADL is heavily involved, are writing code to keep us quiet. Literally, they're writing code to keep us quiet. And it's all being done with these various little, oh, what do you call this, these parameters. If you're blocked, this will affect your quality rating, and therefore you may be filtered. If you are complained about, it will block your quality filter. Well, you know what? I get probably 30, 40 complaints a month by Jewish groups. Okay, sometimes I'm getting 20, 30 a month. For what? Because I said something Mr. Juber doesn't like? So you're going to go whine to Twitter and say, and you go whine to your police, oh, he said something anti-Semitic. Yeah, well, you said something anti-Goy, dude, but I ain't whining like a crybaby,
like you Jews are. Really, it's so infuriating. And now come to find that all of this whining by the Jewish community, whining by the lesbian, gay, transgender community, whining by Israeli groups, all of it could have had a back-end strategy to force certain messages into filters that we never knew was being written. But you don't think the ADL didn't know about that, folks? You don't think that this didn't get leaked into the Jewish community and say, hey, don't worry, we're doing something about it. Here's what we're going to do. And then you don't think that we shouldn't be pissed off by the collusion in the Jewish community to harm our interests while you guys go ahead and keep making all this money? And I say this to the Twitters and the Facebooks of the world. Screw you guys at the end of the day. We need the platform. We don't need you. We need the platform. We don't need you. We need the reach. We don't need you. As far as I'm concerned, nationalize them. They don't like it. I don't care. You got FEMA camps everywhere. Use them. This is treason to the American people. To engage in this layer of willful destruction of political debate for the and then we can extend it to for the express purpose of shaping our elections. Well, this is like saying you're part of the coup d'etat. You are part of the treason. I go in, I swear, I would want to just round them all up. I don't care what the courts say. You know what? Because that's how Jews work. Jews will say, you know what? Just put him in jail. If he can't afford the bail, then he's going to stay there, right? So, okay, let the courts deal with it later. Same thing here. Block all their funds. Now how are you going to get out? That's how Jews are playing the game. It's that sadistic. It's that crazy. And then they don't even want you to be able to talk about it. They want you to cower in your seats and say, there's nothing we can do. Even as we work overtime, our energy is getting throttled back to 10% of what it would be if you just left the open idea marketplace or the open air marketplace of ideas open for everybody. Does everybody think that Mr. Jew Hasbara Clown is really so good to have all of this goodwill? Really? If he doesn't have an advantage over the rest of us? How can you defend the indefensible that is Israel? How can you really defend it from a moral, intellectual point of view? It's indefensible. From a legal point of view, I don't see where Israel has ever signed the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. So I don't see how for 1 second, one penny of American money ever is making its way to Israel. Because they are not even legally entitled to receive any aid from America. That's the law. Now, obviously, if our politicians aren't going to be following the law and they're going to continue to feed this terrorist this enemy of the American people. 9/11 was done by Israel, folks. Wake the heck up. 9/11 was a Jewish operation through and through. You can add in, oh, well, the corporates and this and that. Yeah, but why did you find Jews at nearly every choke point? Literally every key choke point, you'll find a Jewish agent. And then they want to control the message. See, the internet has always presented a unique challenge to Jewish hegemony because it is a distributed network. The genius behind internet protocol, everybody, was to smash this idea of a centralized command and control system that, if taken out, would neutralize communications everywhere. See, within the American ideal and the Western ideal, and quite honestly, those who want to believe in the really good part of what is America, it's this idea of the individual. We don't, on a battlefield, cry and say, oh, call headquarters and see if I can shoot at that pigeon over there. They don't do that. See, you are allowed some autonomy in our system. You're not a robot that's begging for your command for every little action that you do. We're not sitting there waiting for somebody to say,
You can say that now. Yes, go ahead and speak. But don't use the word Jew, because this is forbidden. And you, of course, cannot be anti-Semitic. Otherwise, be free to speak. Talk about your cat report all day. Yeah, that's going to make some very entertaining that'll make some very entertaining shows, I bet, if we did the cat report for 3 hours, right? See, within the Jewish community, it's okay for Jews to tell us that so-and-so, 31-year-old soldier, oh, he had 2 children and a wife, and somebody broke into his house and stabbed him and killed him. Okay, well, first of all, yeah, okay, fine. Nobody wants to see crimes of any nature like that. But when it comes to Israel and the Jewish people, what did this soldier do? Who did he kill? What's his history? I want to know everything about this guy before you come to me and start begging for my tears. Because I have no tears. Not for this. Not for this. What did this soldier do? Literally, what did he do? What did his unit do? What did his extended platoons do? What is he involved in that made somebody so angry that they went in and did something like this? Because you know, if that happened to us and we were quote unquote an anti-Semite, you know what Jews would tell you? It's his own fault. That's what they would say. Oh, he was an anti-Semite. It's his own fault. He lost his job because he's an anti-Semite. It's his own fault. It's his own. That's all you hear from the Jewish community. It's his own fault. Even though they're acting to harm people because they don't like you somehow. But it's your own fault. Hey, see? Okay, fine. All right, Mr. Jew, stop. I get it. Don't come to me about this 31-year-old soldier getting killed while he was sleeping. It's his own fault. And until you can show me otherwise, I'm just listening to you Jews and your stupidity. So get out of my face. Now take this message to Twitter. Take this message to Facebook. All of a sudden, the Jew is being treated like a Jew, and he wants to complain to you and complain about you. What are you complaining about? We're using Jewish behavior. What is it? You're damned if you do or you're damned if you don't, right? Keep fighting. Keep pushing back. And it's so frustrating. Because when you're doing something and things are going good, and all of a sudden somebody says something or does something, and then, like in the case of some of our listeners, they even lose their businesses, folks. For what? Because they donated to something that Jews didn't approve of? Is that America? Is that what we're supposed to be about? If that is what we're supposed to be about, then we should destroy every single Jew that we are not happy with, simply because that's the Jewish way. And I say to the rational Jewish people out there, if you don't like this type of language, do something it from your side, because it ain't coming from us. We're simply responding to what we are seeing day in and day out from Jewish leadership. Don't complain to us about quote-unquote anti-Semitism. Look, you're dealing in a highly individual society where people literally don't like to be told what to do. They don't want to be told how to think. Now, we have, as all of us know, a lot of zombies out there. They just don't get it. They're not so bright. They're not so educated. But there's a war on. John Lamprecht is coming up, everybody. It's the Fetch Inside the Eye Live. All right, everybody, welcome back. It's the Fetch Inside the Eye Live, start of hour number 3, right here. Wow, revolution.radio, huh? Got through 2 hours pretty darn fast, wasn't it? Now we're not doing today we really could not get the echo out of the software that we were doing the live stream for, so we decided probably better to just drop that project so I can get it re-debugged again. There was an update to software, and then it canceled out, and I couldn't get it to work properly. So, nonetheless, it is what it is. Joining us now, Mr. Jan Lamprecht. He was born in Rhodesia. His parents are Boers from South Africa who moved there. He grew up during the Rhodesian Bush War. He moved to South Africa in 1981 and has been there since. He started African Crisis, the AfricanCrisis.com website, wrote the book Government by Deception as a warning to white South Africans of the future. And his current websites are historyreviewed.com and africancrisis.info. And without further ado, Jan, hi. Welcome back to Inside the Eye Live.
Hi there, Dennis. It's nice to be back on your show.
It's nice to have you back. I think you're the first guest we've had in a bit while. We've been doing some stuff here, but it's great to have you back to give us some perspective what's going down in South Africa, which is why we brought you back. But first, I want to say thanks for coming back. How are things right now down in South Africa? It's wintertime there, right?
Yeah, it's wintertime. And you won't believe it, but people get colder in South Africa than they do in America and Europe. And it's mainly because we're stupid. We aren't as organized as the rest of you. That's why we get cold. So I've got friends who've lived in Europe and America, and they tell me that living in South Africa, it's actually colder here than there. But it's not because the temperature's colder. It's because of the silly way that our houses are designed.
Actually, it's like you have the same cold season as we have month wise. You would think that they would figure out how to build something warmer.
Yeah.
it's that bush mentality, man. You got too many people coming up from the bushes in their clay huts, I guess, so they're not thinking about how to actually build things.
I'm telling you, you won't believe it, but every now and then even some of the blacks actually die of the cold. Can you believe? You wouldn't think.
Well, it's probably not a bad thing without being to meet the people. You know, this week or recently, I saw some news coming out that you had Xi Jinping or something like that, Premier Xi from China, gave Ramaphosa a lot of money. His wife has been, not Ramaphosa, but Premier Xi's wife has been going around visiting the schools. And what a wonderful opportunity it is for China and South Africa to work together. What's going on with China right now relative to South Africa?
You know, these blacks in Southern Africa, because of their communist roots, they are linked to Russia and China. Russia from the days of the Soviet Union and communist China also. The Zimbabweans, for example, the government in Zimbabwe was completely funded and armed by the Chinese, the current government that's there and Robert Mugabe. And then the Soviets were busy arming the others. So when it came to these blacks who took over Southern Africa, a lot of them were armed and trained by the Soviets, and some of the others were trained by the Chinese. And some of these blacks in the ANC, they have tried to move closer to China because they don't fully trust the West. So that is where the Russia-China thing comes from, is every now and then these blacks are trying to move closer to China, especially because they don't trust the West. I don't either.
we don't trust them either because they're not really us.
Yes.
They're the same people running your country at the end of the day, but they're just not trustworthy, period.
Exactly. Yep.
When you have Russia, of course, you have BRICS, Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa. South Africa is kind of like it's there, but what? Aren't these guys becoming kind of a liability to the BRICS?
You know, I haven't studied BRICS itself, but the whole theory is to drag South Africa in there. And I can't see South Africa surviving by itself. South Africa is really controlled more from America and Britain. Really, that is really where the heart of South Africa is. And even that is not working so well. And this year has been a particularly hard year. And I'm picking up from all kinds of people that business is at a really all-time low. People are struggling. Whites are struggling. Blacks are struggling. Yesterday, I spoke to a black from Zimbabwe that I know very well, and he's lived here for must be about almost 15 years. And he's one of the few who came here asking for political asylum, because he was opposed to the Zimbabwean government. And he was saying to me yesterday that things are so hard for him that he's thinking of leaving South Africa. So even blacks are struggling to survive in South Africa. And I've heard of blacks moving more to Namibia and other places because South Africa is no longer an easy place. It is not in good shape.
And South Africa, you are like an engine, a driver of immigration, you know, migrants looking, seeking economic opportunity, where a lot of different tribes from all over Africa would kind of like make their way to South Africa. Is that now reversing?
Well, I don't think it's reversing yet because there aren't many opportunities. But I think what I've heard is that some of the blacks, instead of coming to South Africa, are now moving to other countries in Africa, like Zambia and Namibia. But still, there are still stacks who come here. But yeah, it may be slowing down. It may be slowing down. We've still got millions of Zimbabweans who live here permanently and work here, and they send all their money back to Zimbabwe. So we've still got millions of them.
Millions?
Yeah, millions.
That's kind of like Saudi Arabia then, you know, millions of Indians and Bangladeshis come in, send their money back.
Yeah, that's how South Africa's been for a long time. Under black rule, you see, even under white rule, it worked like this. But under white rule, the main draw card was work in the mines. The mines were very profitable then. And blacks would come from thousands of miles away, and they would live here in hostels. They'd get great pay in the mines, and they'd send their money back home. This is, you know, millions. And I can't give an exact number, but at least millions of blacks used to do this all the time in the days of apartheid. And that has continued and even grown perhaps worse. We don't know exactly how many millions of blacks are here. Some people say it might be 10 million. Others say it might be 20 million. We don't know. We've got blacks here from as far away as Nigeria, which is West Africa, which is freaking far away. They come all the way to South Africa and they carry out business here or do crime here. And we've got millions from Zimbabwe. We've got blacks from all over Africa who've come here. I've come across French-speaking blacks, all sorts. They come here and the local blacks hate it because they lose jobs. Because some of the foreign blacks are better workers. It's a whole mess. But we have millions from Zimbabwe, millions, maybe 3 or 4 million.
Now, while the Chinese were making the rounds, I saw Ms. Xi, meeting, these are teachers for the new kindergartens, you know, in China. And, you know, China's going to sponsor these schools. And then across in Durban, you had massive chimp outs of blacks, you know, basically what, you know, deal with all these containers for some of the main box companies in your country. They were just raiding these containers and stealing everything in sight.
Yeah, well, the blacks are always busy with some kind of uprising. See, in South Africa, we've got the blacks are now getting themselves into some hot spots here. And I can make some other comments about the Chinese in Africa as a whole. That is a topic that I can comment on. But regarding the blacks currently, the blacks are moving into a tight spot now where the blacks can't decide which way to go. You've got some blacks like Julius Malema, who is trying to get the blacks to continue with the communist revolution, which Nelson Mandela began. So they want the blacks to go hardcore commie like in Zimbabwe. But that has already backfired massively on Zimbabwe, and Zimbabwe is in a bad state. And I've got some news for you about that. Zimbabwe is about to go even more downhill, and it's going to happen because of all the nonsense that they've been up to there. There is a lot of traffic, trucks, that go from South Africa into the deepest parts of Africa, Central Africa, East Africa, almost up to the equator. This has been going, this traffic has been running for years and years and years. And the main road to get from South Africa up far into the center of Africa and East Africa has been through Zimbabwe, because places like Mozambique to the east are so underdeveloped that that's not a viable route, and there haven't been other viable routes. And so the Zimbabweans, with all their communist anti-white nonsense, have themselves become unstable and have done what the hell they wanted. So when trucks want to go to the out of South Africa, deep into Africa with their goods, they sometimes will wait for something like 2 weeks at the border post of Zimbabwe just to get into Zimbabwe, to be able to drive through Zimbabwe and then to carry on north. Now, a friend of mine was telling me that the Japanese have been building a bridge, and they've built a bridge. They're busy finishing off a bridge that is going to go from Botswana, which is to the west of South Africa. It's going to be a bridge that's going to go from Botswana through Zambia, which used to be northern Rhodesia. And when this bridge opens up, my friend was predicting most of the traffic that used to go through Zimbabwe will go through Botswana and through Zambia, and it will enter into the rest of Africa. He reckons that Botswana is going to have a boom, and this is going to just be another nail in the coffin of Zimbabwe. Zimbabwe is in bad shape. And by the way, the Zimbabweans are due to have an election in 2 days' time, and we strongly suspect it will be rigged so that the communist Mnangagwa can carry on. Because even though they kicked out Mugabe, it's still Mugabe's political party that is still running Zimbabwe. So nothing has changed, really.
Now, Botswana was a fairly friendly to white people for the most part, wasn't it?
Somewhat. In the days of our wars, they were a little bit on the side of the blacks. There were odd times when Rhodesia actually went and attacked blacks in Botswana. But on the whole, they were friendlier to the whites, and they are very friendly to America. And in the last 20 years, I'd say Botswana has been the friendliest place to whites. It's mostly a desert kind of a country. It only has like one city, which is the capital. And I've got a friend who moved there long ago because he said it would be better than South Africa. And he's actually done very well for himself there. So there are a couple of whites there. The population is very, very low because it's a desert type country. So, yeah, Botswana has actually grown more economically than these other countries. And it's pretty well governed. It's one of the few places that still has the death penalty. It's still got some kind of law and order. It's not as screwed up as these. The countries that got really screwed up were all the good countries that were then taken over by black commies. All those countries have been absolutely screwed up. The only one that's doing quite well is Namibia, and that's because the black population there is also very small. Namibia used to be German Southwest Africa, and the Germans, I think, still play a bit of a role there. And there's a bit of a Boer and German population there. So it's very much like Botswana, low population, mostly desert, but at least more stable.
This bridge you talk about, it sounds like it's a fairly large infrastructure project. Who's paying for that?
I'm told that it's a Japanese project. That's what I was told.
But who's paying for it? Is this a gift by the people of Japan to Botswana or what?
I can't give you more details. That's all that I was told by my friend who lives in Botswana. So whether the It may even be some kind of cooperation thing. It could be.
So this is going to then bypass a lot
Zimbabwe.
Of the traffic, Zimbabwe entirely.
Totally. And they've been quietly building a set of highways that pass through some of these other countries. And that set of highways is just going to add to it now. And then there's quite a lot of traffic that'll be going up through the center of Africa. The United States carries out military exercises in Botswana every year. And in Botswana is a mysterious runway that was built many years ago, and it's a runway that was built outside Gaborone, and it was a runway that was extremely long and not needed by the government of Botswana. And the talk at the time was that the United States government may have paid for that runway, and that runway is there for the U.S. military to use. And in the 1980s, there was information that if the whites of South Africa did not surrender and hand over to the blacks, that the United States could come to Botswana and could bomb us from Botswana.
Well, that would have been a nice change of geopolitical strategy for you guys.
Yeah. So I have no doubt they would have done that if we, you know, now that I understand the British and the Americans and the total Jewish control of stuff, I have no doubt that they would have attacked us if we'd continued to fight on.
Now, moving just one real quick, and then we'll move on to the other issue, which is that the sovereign state of good hope. Is China's what we call, I think, their debt strategy, where they are looking to acquire national assets by getting countries into debt. And they're kind of doing that with Zimbabwe. And is that in the store for South Africa also?
You know, in the case of Zimbabwe, I think that the Chinese, the Zimbabweans actually have to pay for stuff, hey? The only things that they didn't pay for were the things during the liberation wars, you know, and part of the deal for the blacks, when the blacks dealt with the Russians and the Chinese, the deal was that if the blacks come to power, that the blacks must continue with communism. That was the deal. And that was the basis on which the Russians especially pumped lots of money into the black liberation movements. But the Chinese did come and did try to interact with the Zimbabweans quite a lot. Like once the whites had lost, there were still members of my family in Zimbabwe at the time that I'd moved to South Africa. And they told me that large numbers of Chinese suddenly appeared in Zimbabwe, large numbers. But over the years, the Chinese have tried to move into Africa many times, but they've not been that successful. The Chinese and Russians have tried in many ways to move into Africa. The Russians never moved people into Africa. They merely moved military advisors or other geopolitical people in, and they'd operate through the embassies. The Chinese, on the other hand, have actually brought people here to do stuff. Like there was a time when there was quite a lot of Chinese in Botswana, and the Chinese, I think, built a railway line from Zambia to Tanzania. Tanzania used to be German East Africa. Now, the Chinese built the Trans-Am railway line, I think, in the 60s or 70s, and they were trying to make the blacks independent of the whites. They built the Trans-Am railway line. I think Rhodesia even went and attacked it at some point, and The Chinese have moved into Southern Africa quite a number of times. And even here in South Africa, there's apparently a suburb in the east of Johannesburg where the Chinese have been doing a lot of stuff, and there are some Chinese banks here. But on the whole, from what I've seen of the Chinese are not that successful in Africa. They come, they do some things for a while, they see what they can build up, but they aren't really able to survive in the long run. The Russians just operate at a political level. They just interact with the governments. You don't get Russians coming in and living among us. There are a handful from Russia and Eastern Europe, but the Chinese have been trying to move in, and I don't think the Chinese will be that successful in Africa. They struggle in Africa. Believe it or not, the whites actually are tougher, and they do better in Africa than the Chinese. The Chinese, I don't see them as a big threat.
That's interesting. I thought that China was actually making much more headway in Africa than you're reporting here. So that's actually very interesting news.
Yeah, I really don't regard the Chinese as a big threat. I think the best they will do is try and see what business they can get. Like the blacks, for example, at a point more than 20 years ago, we had a big clothing industry. And the clothing industry in South Africa was run by Jews, can you believe, and Indians. And the government then opened the doors for the Chinese products to move in. The Chinese products came in and destroyed our local clothing industry, totally wiped it out, wiped out the Jews, wiped out the Indians. And that has... And in that sense, they've retained a presence. So they've had some of their products come in, and some of their products have stayed. Mainly clothing, I would say.
Well, half hour there, Jan. It's Jan Lamprecht, everybody. HistoryReview.com and AfricaCrisis.info. Back with the next half. Everybody, welcome back. Helps if you turn the right knob down. It's the Fetch, everybody. Inside the Eye, live intelligent media for the politically aware. Jan, welcome back. You know, this is the start of year number 8 for Inside the Eye Live. You are the first guest of year number 8.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, this is
and you've been going a long time.
Yeah, 8 years now. This is the start. So you got in, number one, man.
Thank you.
It's kind of a relaxed show. I couldn't do the live stream on YouTube, and I'll tell you what, to do radio is easy. To have that camera staring at you all day while you're trying to do the show or you're doing it, it's a little bit more complicated to do what we do here. So it's just nice to be able to talk to you and not have to worry about cameras and everything else, which is making this kind of fun.
Oh, okay. That's good.
So... let's kind of move on to just some other issues. We got some of that macro just reporting out of the way, which is kind of great for everybody to understand what's going on. I didn't know about the America, like for instance in Botswana. That's news to me. I had no idea. So that was very interesting. Nobody heard about the bridge, so that's interesting. So we'll be watching that. The issue, of course, that everybody talks about South Africa is the white genocide, the farm attacks, the farm murders. How serious is that problem still to this day? Is it toning down? Is it getting worse? Is it basically just running right along? What's the situation with the farm attacks?
My view of the farm attacks, and from what I've been able to piece together, is that I think the farm attacks, there are like two aspects to it. The one is how many times are the farmers attacked? And then of the number of times that they're attacked, how many times are they killed? You know, how many attacks result in actual deaths? Okay. So what I've picked up is that in recent years, the number of attacks have gone up.
Jan, it's attack to kill ratio is what you're telling in a way.
Exactly. So okay. what I understand is that the number of attacks in recent years have gone up. But the number of people actually killed has not gone up. It's pretty much similar. And the more I look at it, I haven't I used to have other statistics, which I don't have in front of me now, but it did appear to me that the number of people getting killed, you are still getting maybe a couple of people killed every week, but it's not like the number being killed has gone up. It's as if I think that the whites have, over a long period of time, I think the whites have become more effective at defending themselves, and the attackers are having a harder time actually killing the farmers. But, of course, it would be nice if we could stop all the deaths, but the rate is not so great that all the farmers are just going to be wiped out. It's not that bad. But there are a dozen or two dozen people that will die every month. And so it's like a low intensity thing. And the blacks.
Just real quick, when you have this level, I mean, 12 is a lot. Two dozen's a lot. How much productive land then starts to get taken out every month?
Well, that I can't comment on.
I said that's a good question. How much land is being taken out of production every month by this? That's actually an interesting question.
That it would depend on who is killed, you know. There are statistics that the farming organizations have. Let me put it this way. There are a lot of farming organizations in South Africa, a lot of them. And some of them have got quite a lot of money. And the farmers, some of the richer farmers, are the key people who are helping to support these farming organizations. So these farming organizations have got a lot of clout. But now the problem that comes that I've seen, and this is the big problem, is that when there's money, then money always affects the truth. So these farming organizations know a lot of things, and they will put out certain information. But at the same time, they don't want to stir up panic because they are concerned that they will destroy the industry. So because of money, there are lots of things about these farm attacks that we don't know, because none of these organizations will come out and say it. And these organizations also are careful to not come and bring up the racial issue. So they're always ducking and diving and trying to put out the information in a sort of a liberal way. And there are things that they do and things that they know that they will never tell you. And I've met with some of these people face to face myself, and I've spoken to them about certain incidents. And I can tell you, they know a lot more than they ever tell. And when they are put in a corner and the mass media and everybody is looking at them, I saw an article that came out from one of the farm organizations a few months ago. When they are put in a corner and they are told to discuss, you know, farm murders and attacks, I've even seen them come out and put out a news story and say that the farm attacks are not that bad and the situation is actually improving. So the problem is there is information, but the real information will not come out in the mass media, and these big organizations will not tell it. And these organizations are run by whites. They know everything that's going on. They know stacks of stuff. I've even spoken to them about how do they hunt down farm attackers. And they've told me some things. And they've said things to me which show me that they are in some cases highly organized. They've got access to things that you wouldn't even believe, but they don't talk about the entire thing. So what you've got is a war, a low-intensity war that's raging, and that low-intensity war, the whites know more than they're telling. The whites are also more successful than they're telling, but they don't tell the full story either. So it's very hard
to keep. Now, how about the federal government then? Obviously, we've had the comments how we're going to take the land and not pay for it. Is this more huffery and puffery then than what's the reality on the ground?
These farming organizations that I'm talking about are all white-owned and white-run. This is not government-related in any way.
The government says we are going to take your land without compensation. Now, that made big headlines. How much is that huffing and puffing then, and what's really the situation between the farm organizations, which you say are waging a successful war against this insurgency, and the federal government, which seems to want to come down, at least on a public relations side, on the side of the low-level insurgents?
Yeah.
See what I mean?
You see, there's all kinds of hidden stuff going on, and the government itself knows things probably about these crimes and may even themselves secretly be involved in some of these farm killings, but nobody talks. In the case of the land seizures, the thing that is happening currently is that the government is supposed to consult with all parties, and they've been having meetings across the country, and at the end of August, the parliament is supposed to present the committee in parliament is supposed to present a paper. Now, the thing that is happening, as I see it among the black politicians, is you've got a guy like Malema, and Malema's gone for the normal black, the low-level black, and he's gone there with his full-on communist rhetoric. And Malema's been gaining followers over the years, and he's got several million followers. Now, Malema is using this because this was one of the original principles of the revolution and the war that they fought against the whites. So Malema's trying to use this to gain more supporters among the blacks. But now what you've got is you've got a guy like Ramaphosa, who is also a communist. He's a hardcore commie, but the Jews and the liberals sucked him into business and made him a billionaire. And Ramaphosa owns lots of things. People tell me that Ramaphosa owns the McDonald's franchise in South Africa, and he's got shares in about 34 different public companies. Now, Ramaphosa is being manipulated by the rich. The rich and the Jews and the elite and America and that sort of thing. So he also is moving down the path. He's seen that if he doesn't compete with Malema, that Malema is going to gain ground. And so he's also actually pushed this himself. Now, the whole thing that remains to be seen is what exactly they put into law. And what exactly are going to be the conditions for this? What Malema really wants is Malema wants the government to seize all the land in South Africa. I mean everything. He wants the government to take total control of all the land in South Africa. And so the government then
not
basically...
Not just white land, it's all land.
Everything. This is okay. Total communism. And then he wants the government, in effect, to kind of rent the land back to the people. But that thing, that is very hectic, and there's a big problem with that. Now, in South Africa, one of the secrets of South Africa is that there are still lots of Jews and whites, and this includes Boers. There are still lots of whites, Afrikaans, and so forth, who have got lots of money and they still have lots of power in this country. But it's financial and business power. Now, these businesses can put certain pressure on the government. They can play certain games. It's just like with the farming organizations. They can play certain games with the government. So the other problem that's also a big problem for them is that they are very worried about foreign investment. And I must be honest with you, I don't understand why any country needs foreign investment, but that is the way the world works. And so the foreign investment, the money has been flowing out of South Africa because of this land thing now. So it looks to me basically like The government is in a spot where it's got to respond on the one hand to the radical blacks, and Ramaphosa himself might be very radical as well. But I think that there are limits to how far they can go, because their bigger problem that they face is that the economy is just getting more and more sluggish. Things are not moving forward. And the blacks, their population is growing and their demand for work is always increasing. And they are not getting enough jobs. So he's got a big economic game he's got to play. And the politics of the blacks is getting interesting. And I think they are getting more divided. But I still think that the African National Congress is going to win the next election. They said that as a result of bringing in Ramaphosa, he's very popular. They've said that in their planning for the next election, that the ANC has got about 60% of the vote. So it looks like in April next year that they're going to win the election again. The ANC will always pull out all stops in order to win. And I think that they will still remain in power. The Jews had hoped that by bringing in their liberals and Malema and all the others, that they could come and unseat the ANC. But I don't see that happening. I don't see that happening. But the blacks are fracturing a bit, and even getting rid of President Zuma may be starting to backfire on them, because Zuma is currently in court, and I see that Zuma is actually quite concerned that the government is slowing the legal process down. And it looks like Zuma is fighting back quite hard. And Zuma was important because the African National Congress, all of its leaders have always been Khoisas. Khoisas are people from the Eastern Cape. And Mandela was a Khoisa. So there used to be a theory among the blacks. Years ago, young blacks came to me when I started African Crisis. And they said to me that there's a Khoisa conspiracy against Zulus. The Zulus and Khoisas are old-time enemies. And the Zulus are actually the biggest single tribe in South Africa. There are about 6 or 7 million or so. Now, these Zulus used to actively fight against the ANC. And then Zuma came along, and he was a communist, and he's a Zulu communist, and he went up in the ranks of the ANC, and in so doing, he brought millions of Zulus into the ANC. But now that they've kicked Zuma out, they might actually be opening up a problem with Zulus, because Zuma might not represent all Zulus, but he is a Zulu, and he does have quite a lot of clout. So I think the blacks are little by little splitting apart, and the ANC itself is struggling with the economy. So they have to be careful what they push. So I don't think it's quite as cut and dried exactly what he's going to do. And if he goes down the path of Mugabe, there's a lot of business in South Africa still, lots of liberal money, and they can hurt the government. So
moving then, you talk about this internal battle, but now something was brought to us a couple of weeks ago, Karen Smith talking about the Khoisan, the Goab Cornelius something in this we've told Cape Town to take their Cape Town Parliament and close it and hoisted their flag and all this fanfare about a secession. And I'll be honest, I didn't take it all that seriously, simply because look at what happened to Barcelona and Catalan independence, and that was far more organized than something like this. Can you give us any updates, any information about this secession attempt by the Khoisan tribe under King Cornelius?
Okay, I'm glad you didn't take it too seriously, because I also didn't take it too seriously. I have been hearing about it, and I know that Corin Smith has been talking about it, and her associate Mel V was the one who spoke about it the most to me, and I've been doing some digging into the matter. There are some whites in the white right. We've got quite a fragmented white right with all sorts of people trying different things. Now, some of the right-wingers have been pushing this thing because it brings about a condition that maybe moves our agenda forward in some way, and it's not seen as racist. So there are a couple of people here and there who've been involved and who've been helping this king. The real chance to give you an answer up front, the chance of the Khoisan ruling any part of South Africa is as good as the Red Indians have of ruling any part of America. They are not really players. They're not going to be a big power. They aren't a big thing. Now, the big thing that Mel V was telling me was, she was saying, yes, but, you know, this guy had gone and there was some American professor who is an expert, and he'd said that in terms of a legal claim to power, this Khoisan king has got the greatest claim, and he is directly related, and legal stuff, you know, is going to work. My question is that when it comes to serious political stuff, is that if you don't have real power, show me an example where a lawyer or a judge goes and changes the country based on the law. That never happens. I assure you, these people will never go and say, oh, goodness, the government of South Africa is illegal and the judge rules that South Africa has to be split in two. That's never going to happen, okay?
Yeah, I talked to Karen, I said, Karen, it sounds great. You're telling them get out. But how would you even begin to start to secure your borders? Do you have the police behind you, the military behind you, all the instruments of state? Are they behind you? Otherwise, what are you really saying here?
Exactly. And, you know, in European history, you will find many times that there were kings and queens who had a valid right to a piece of to a country. And due to the way that they married and intermarried, there would be times when a king could even rule more than one country, and it was a valid right that they had, okay? And you will see that there are a number of occasions where when a guy was the rightful king of a country, that he still had to go and raise an army and go and attack and invade in order to get his rightful throne. So that is the kind of situation that these guys face. I said to these people that I don't care what legal standing this has. If the king doesn't have physical power, nothing will come of it. And I'll tell you what I discovered this last week was there were some people on the white right who were quite worried about this because they reckoned that this thing could result in either the ANC launching an attack on whites and or the coloureds, and they were very concerned about it. So I spoke to a guy called Isaac van Sail. Now, Isaac van Sail is the guy who runs an organization called the Boere Legion. Now, he told me that he's sort of linked to this group as a security type consultant, and he and his organization, which is mostly composed of whites, they will take care of security on the ground if somehow the ANC or anything else, any kind of violence breaks out. So he's purely there as a sort of police and security kind of force if needed. And I know that Mel V originally wanted the Sidelanders to do this, and the Sidelanders didn't want to touch this with barge pole. But anyway, Isaac, I think Isaac was a policeman anyway in his career. So he knows how to do this. And they were all quite concerned when this eviction order came about, because the eviction order was to now say that the South African parliament must shut down and now the country's taken over. You see, because the king went through the process of doing the secession last year, and then he did the secession ceremony and all that, and nothing happened afterwards. And now he came back with the legal process of eviction. So he followed all the legal principles. He went, he filed his stuff in the court and everything, and then he'd given them a deadline and said, you know, game over. You must now shut down and get out. But of course, the legal stuff doesn't work that way, okay? He who has the guns makes the rules. So, you know, they didn't do anything. From what I could pick up, I then tried to contact people directly. And among the things that I came across, I'm not going to give the sources for some of my information. I'll just tell you, in my discussions with various people who have knowledge of this, they told me that the king had appointed 3 field marshals.
Hello. I don't know if I've lost you or what. What's happened here? Jan, I think we've lost you. I'm going to hang up on you and come right back at you. It appears we've lost you, so just hang tight. Yeah, we lost you. Try to call back again, Jan, or let me just drag you back in. Hold on. He has actually gone off air, folks. Jan, that was an interesting time to go off the air. He was talking about how King Cornelius, he's the head of the Khoisan tribe that has declared independence in South Africa, has appointed 3 field marshals. Again, if you look at how South Africa would be divided under the Khoisan's plan, I don't know about natural resources or anything like that relative to South Africa. It would have been very interesting, you know, to get Jan to tell me where the natural resources are. Are the Khoisan trying to take the bulk of the natural resources? What I understand, though, is that it's basically been kind of like shirked, like, okay, whatever, type of mentality from the federal government in Pretoria. They're basically saying, whatever, man, do what you want to do. We don't care. Nobody's trying to play this up, and so that's kind of the deal. but, yeah, we did have Karen running through, making a lot of comments. I'm a geopolitical guy, as you guys know. The head of Somaliland, for instance, the president of Somaliland, I've met with him here. And, yeah, Lon is back. Let me see if I can bring Jan back on. And, Jan, there you are. Let's try to bring Jan back in to finish this conversation. It's not connecting. All right, it's the Fetch, Inside the Eye Live, intelligent media for the politically aware. See you all Thursday, Inside the Eye Live, primetime. Thanks for listening, everybody. Catch you Thursday. Have a good weekend.